All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 43 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. We have witnessed the birth of Athenian democracy thanks to the innovation of Cleisthenes, the inventor of the idea. And so where do we go from here? Well, of course, we are interested to know what the Athenians did after that, right? We are interested to know, how did Athenian democracy work? And what were its successes and what were its challenges and so on? Because that is the kind of thing that is always good to find in history. When you find an instructive example of something, you see better how it works. Especially if it's something that you yourself have in front of you, such as American democracy and other examples of it. And the more you are aware of the world, the more you pay attention to examples of it. So you can find examples of it, for instance, in France and in other countries. There was a very interesting example of some democratic events even in a place like Saudi Arabia recently. So it's just so fascinating to look around in the world and see democracy in action. And that leads to questions by anybody that has an active mind. You look at it, you want to understand it, you want to figure out how come it works that way and perhaps what's good about it. And then you also might be concerned that there are some things that are not so good. And you want to look at it, you want to figure it out. And that is a natural thing. And looking at ancient examples is another way to understand something better. So that's definitely one of the things we want to do. We want to look at Athenian democracy. It was the original. It was the very first and most important in that regard, because it taught us the meaning of the idea and it shows us the meaning as well through its actions. But the very first important story connected to Athenian democracy is a war. And I have already previewed this war for everybody here. I've already teased you that it was coming. I told you a while ago that it was the most important war in human history. Wow, number one on the top of Mr. Powell's list of most important wars. More important than World War I. More important than World War II. More important than any other war in history. So, yeah, this is coming here and it is connected to Athenian democracy. It is called the Greco-Persian War. Now, we already know one side of that idea. Usually when we have a name of a war, by the way, in case you were wondering, right? If we write the Greco and then we put a dash or a hyphen, and we write another side, Persian, right? When you put the name of a war like that, the reason why you do it that way is because, of course, a war typically has two sides to it, and you want to name both sides. So that makes sense. Rosetta, something occurred to you?
Well, I was just thinking, it sounds like Persia.
Yeah. Yes, indeed, right? So that's the part that we already know. Persia is the second part of the name Greco-Persian. Now, the first part is not Athena. The first part, which would stand for Athens, right? So the first part is Greco, which hopefully jumps out at you as meaning something. So what's that? Julia?
Greece,
as a whole, as a sum. Okay, but we know that Greece was not a whole, that it was not a connected country like Egypt. What was it? A collection of what? What was Greece made of, Sigourney?
Concrete.
City state.
Good. City states. Back to our map of Greece. Here we go. City states. So on a map like this, where we have a city like Athens, it's not just a city. What would it be in modern terms? What word would we normally use to refer to such a thing in modern terms? Rosetta?
A state?
It's a tricky one. It's a tricky one. We have a more general term for that. Because Texas is a state, but it's not the kind of thing that I'm talking about. So what is, used to be, that's a hint. So the United States is an example of one. Russia is an example of one. So back in ancient times, Athens as a city was an example of one. So what word am I looking for here? Rosetta?
Colony?
No, that's very... Yeah, the United States used to be made up of colonies, but it's not a colony anymore. So it is an independent country. Okay, the word I'm looking for here is country. It behaves... It is a country. The United States is a country. Russia is a country. China is a country. Right? Okay. And so these places have their own armies. They have their own governments, which are completely separate from anybody else's government. And they are created and organized by rules that have to do with the laws of that country only. Okay, so Athens was like that, and other parts of Greece were like that. There were other important city-states. So if we're going to be talking about the Greco-Persian Wars, we better have some understanding of things other than Athens. Otherwise, well, we're going to be thinking that Athens is the whole thing. And it certainly is not. There were a number of important city-states. Pretty much every city-state that is labeled here played some sort of role, although they were of varying degrees of importance. So I would say that it really is beyond argument that Athens was the most important. And so we spent quite a lot of time talking about it already. Okay, so we got Athens here. But number two, in terms of historical importance in all of ancient Greece, was, I better use a different color, it would be appropriate to use red, Sparta, down here, on this almost island called the Peloponnese. Sparta was the dominant city-state of the Peloponnese. And when we get to the Greco-Persian Wars, we are talking about wars between the Greeks as a group against the Persians. And that group of Greeks has most of the city-states in it. But the leaders of that group were none other than Athens and Sparta. So it is a good idea for us to look at Sparta and understand what it was like, because it was an ally of Athens against Persia. But we're going to see that that was not an easy alliance, that it was not a natural alliance, because, and here's another reason why Sparta is important to history. Sparta had yet another kind of government. Yet another. So, this is going to be interesting. That makes it our fifth form of government in ancient Greece. Now think about that. I mean, through the entire history of ancient Egypt, we saw one. The entire history of ancient Persia, we saw one. And now we are studying the Greeks, and they've already come up with five different kinds. This is part of why ancient Greece is so important, because that's what the Greeks were like. They experimented. They tried to think of new things. The Athenians were the best at that. And the Spartans, on the other hand, well, it's a very interesting case. The Spartan form of government has had many fans throughout history. Many fans throughout history. In fact, even up until recently, you could say that, well, before you guys were born, but in my lifetime, there were countries in the world that were organized pretty much like Sparta. And so what form of government is this? Is a very interesting question. But in order to answer that question, we are going to do an exercise that is a little bit like art appreciation. As you know, in art appreciation, I do not tell you the title at the beginning. What do we do? It's torture sometimes, but we work hard at it. What do? Right, Rosetta?
We make our own title.
Yes, but that's the last step of a big, long process. How does the process work? What is the very first thing that we do? And I always emphasize it, and sometimes come down hard on people and I say, stop that! Stop that interpretation! Do this other thing! What is the first thing that we do, Julia?
We just let our eyes be drawn to whatever they go to.
Okay, to put that in a single word, we look. We look at it. Okay, and then we gradually think and combine and analyze, people would say, and interpret and integrate and put all of the evidence together. And only then would it make sense to have a title, right? Because the title then represents the whole, not some part, not some little bit of it, but rather the whole thing. And that would be the most appropriate title. Because we're not naming a part of the painting, we're naming the whole painting. So, same thing goes for the government of Sparta. It's going to be a very interesting one to study. Because as we look at it, you will see parts of the government of Sparta that look like other governments. And you will say, oh, well, isn't it that kind? Or isn't it the other kind? And, oh, wait a minute, it sure looks like this kind. And you will find that it's quite strange because you will see combinations of things that are quite unusual. And it's a very interesting form of government. But in the end, we're going to have to say, hey, wait a minute, it might have something that looks like that and something that looks like this. But ultimately, it adds up in a whole other way than anything else, so we need a new name. So that's what we're going to be seeing here today, is that the government of Sparta was unique. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about unique in what ways. Well, actually, first, in order to be nice, kind of really comfortable in this discussion, we need to have it be automatic, like a fax practice level of automatic, that when I say the name of another kind of government, you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? We've got to get to the point now where this just slips right off the tongue. It is no effort required, right? So what I want to see here right now is that everybody in the class is going to, we're going to have a contest before we get going into the government of Sparta. And the contest is this. Patrick likes contests. Okay? So here's the contest. I'm going to say the name of a government, and you will put up your hand as fast as you can in order to tell me what it means, in order to give me the definition. Of course, if you don't know the definition, then don't raise your hand. Okay? But I want to see how fast you can answer the question. Ready? First form of government. Monarchy. Oh, Patrick was faster than Rosetta. Patrick, what is monarchy?
The rule of one.
Excellent. Okay. Patrick is quite relieved because he's been working on that one, and he would say, normally he would say, well, having a king, right? Or where there's a king in charge, right? And that's just fine, but we want to be specific. Mon means one, and archi means rule. So the rule of one. Good. That needs to be automatic. I only saw three hands shoot up, so it was not automatic for everybody. Let's see if you guys can be faster on the second one. Ready, set, aristocracy. Opal's hand went up before I said it. That was good. Way to go, Opal. You win. What's aristocracy?
Aristocracy is a rule of a group of people you've had to, who calls themselves as the best.
Okay, the rule of the best. Because aristos means the best. And that's nice what you said, Opal. You elaborated a little bit. It's the rule of a group, a large group, that thinks themselves the best. Okay, good. All right, on your mark, get set, Tyrannos. Not bad. Sigourney, I think your hand was up from before. It's going to disqualify you. You got to put your hand down first. Rosetta, Tyrannos, please.
The rule of Tyrannos is a person who rebels against the government and becomes the ruler.
How does he become the ruler? This is most important. You've missed that part.
He becomes the ruler by the vote, well, sort of the vote of the people.
Yes. So he is a king chosen by the people. Okay, very good. A king chosen by a people. The rule of a tyrannos. Okay, that's form of government number three. Put your hand down now, Rosetta. Okay, and finally, number four. Dun, 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 dun. Drum roll. Democracy! And Patrick's hand shoots up. You already answered one. I want everybody to try to answer one. That's good. Sigourney, what is democracy?
The people vote and the majority rules.
Nicely said. Right. Okay. The rule of the people, the demos, and thus the majority rules. Okay, good. That we need automatic now. Because I'm going to tell you, that I'm going to give you a hint about the government of Sparta, and you tell me what does the hint show us? A hint about the government of Sparta is that, remember, the king of Sparta went to the oracle at Delphi. Hey, that's quite a hint. Wow, sometimes it just really slips by you, doesn't it? Nobody got that hint at all? All right, I'll say it again and see if you can get my hint. The king of Sparta went to the oracle at Delphi. Whew. Oh, the hands are starting to come up. Okay, Rosetta, what did I say there?
He went to the oracle of Delphi.
Who went?
The king of Sparta.
Okay, well, you haven't answered my question yet.
Oh, monarchy.
Oh, that's quite a hint, isn't it? The king went to the oracle. The who? The king. Okay, wait now. The hint gets more complicated. The hint gets more complicated. Because the oracle told him, Athens must be set free. And so the king went and got the Spartan army and helped the Athenian aristocracy to take back Athens. That's kind of an interesting point. Who did the Spartans help? Patrick?
The Athens.
No, not the Athenians in general. Who did they help specifically?
The Eupatrids?
Yes, but I just said it, the general term, the Eupatrids were the
aristocrats.
The aristocrats. Okay, so wouldn't a king normally want to help another king? But what he needed to do was get the Spartan army. Those are the Spartan lords, right? And He went to help the Athenian aristocrats. Hmm, okay. So wait a minute. Is Sparta a monarchy? Is it an aristocracy? Well, it's going to be quite interesting to talk about it because it was both and neither. Let's talk about this. Okay, fact number one about the Athenian form of government. Sparta. I gotta be careful, right? Sparta is what we're talking about. Fact number one about the Spartan form of government. So, Sparta was conquered by the Dorians. So, remember that there were two main groups, two large tribes in Greece. The Dorians, who had invaded and made kind of a dark age. They ruined the Mycenaeans. They made this kind of dark age. Who were the ones that defended themselves? And Athens was an example of it. I know, there's a lot of names here. It ends with "ns." All right, I'll give it to you because it's otherwise it's asking too much. The Athenians were Ionians, and the Spartans were Dorians. So they were members of separate tribes. Okay, and the Dorians had conquered this whole region here around Sparta, which has a variety of names. And there were already people living there. There were already people from the Mycenaean times. There were people from the Ionian tribes. There were lots of people living there already. And the Dorians came and conquered that area and ruled it as a group. So they had an aristocracy like in Athens. But it was not an aristocracy of defenders, who are the most important people because they protect the city. It was an aristocracy of conquerors, of people who had taken over the city, had taken over the region. And these guys, the Spartan aristocracy, well, it's a name that reminds us a lot of Sparta, so it's not too hard to remember or anything. The Spartan aristocracy was called the Spartiatae. Pretty easy to kind of connect that. It's a strange, you know, Greek-sounding term, though. Okay, so the Spartan aristocracy were the Spartiatae. And, yes, there was an aristocracy. But remember, there was one in Athens as well, right? What was the name of the Athenian aristocracy again? A few people said it already. But I know now you're scrambling to write down the word Spartiatae. So, what were the Athenian aristocrats called, Rosetta?
Well, the Eupatrids.
The Eupatrids, okay. So in Sparta, the conquerors are the Spartiatae, and they control the land, and they are Dorian military aristocracy, okay? And they control the people beneath them, including the commoners, and below them even the slaves. So the arrangement of society was seemingly kind of the same as in Athens, right? You got commoners and you got slaves. The difference is in Athens, all the people are Ionians. They all belong to the same tribe. But in Sparta, the rulers belong to one tribe, and the people underneath belong to another. So that's one slight difference, okay? Just one to notice. So the commoners and the slaves, we can give them the Spartan names, just because it's kind of cool. They were the periakoi. That is the commoners. Okay? So I'm writing that down for you. So the commoners were conquered Ionian, Mycenaean people. They didn't belong to the same group. The commoners were the periakoi, and the slaves or the Helots. Okay, now, I bring up these terms because there were some important differences between these kinds of commoners and these kinds of slaves, between them and in Athens, for instance. Here's an interesting difference between the commoners of Sparta and the commoners of Athens. The commoners of Athens could be put to death by the Spartans. You didn't have to commit a crime. In other words, the commoners of Sparta had no right to, how would we put that in modern times? If you can be put to death, what do you not have a right to? Patrick?
Freedom?
Well, what's the opposite of death?
Being alive?
Yeah. So what do we call that? The right to? What did Thomas Jefferson put in the Declaration of Independence?
Oh.
Yes?
The right to life, liberty, and...
Okay, but which one am I talking about? The most basic one. Life, right? So the commoners of Sparta had no right to life. Because basically, if the Spartans decided, if the Spartiatai decided, they could take Periakoi and put them to death. And of course, they could do just whatever they wanted to the Helots. Okay, now this was partly because that this society of Sparta had two different tribes. And the ruling group was from one tribe, and everybody else was from another tribe. So this was part of the difference of what Sparta was like. But there's more. There's more. So remember what I said earlier? I said, we're going to look, and we're gonna name things, and we're going to look at them, and then we're going to see that this is a puzzle, that the pieces don't go together like any other puzzle. Okay, we've already said, we talked there was a king. We talked about there's an aristocracy, the Spartiatai. We talked about there's commoners and slaves, but they're not the same as in other places because they belong to different tribes. Okay, so what else is strange about this place? Well, one of the most interesting things about Spartan slaves was that they were not owned by any individuals. Wait, Rosetta may have a question here. Rosetta, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I forgot.
Okay, let me repeat what I just said. Spartan slaves, the Helots, okay, were not owned by individual owners. But they were owned. Now, the expression we would normally use, we got a bunch of different synonyms here, okay? They were owned by the state, would be a common kind of grown-up expression. But that is a confusing word, state, right? Because we keep on bumping up against that word, and it has a different meaning in different contexts. So, here what I would say is, the Spartan slaves, the Helots, were owned by the government. Okay? They were owned by the government, not by individuals. Now, your hand went back up, Rosetta. I don't know if you're having malfunctions there or what, but let's see what's going on. Go ahead.
Were the Helots the names of the slaves, or were the names of the tribe? The name of the tribe.
That is the name of the category. In other words, the word that means slave. So it's not a tribe name. Okay? Okay. So it's just a category. So they were owned by the government. And we can use another word here, which is interesting and a very important word, which is the slaves were owned by the Spartans. This is a very big vocabulary word, very important word. Collectively. Look at that word, collectively. Very important vocabulary word. So how did the Spartans own the slaves? They didn't own them individually. They owned them collectively. Okay, now what does that mean? This is a very challenging word. Okay? It's very difficult to pin down the meaning of it. And so to help you understand what this means, I'm going to use an example of a similar idea that exists in modern times. So let's see if you can grasp how this works. Think about, in order to understand the idea of something being owned collectively by a group of people, and the government is in charge of it, okay? I want you to think about the way that the roads work today. So you get in your car at home, and as soon as you leave your driveway or your parking spot or what have you, you go on a road, right? And who does that road belong to? Unlike your parking spot or your driveway. Right? If your parents own a home or whatever, that driveway and that parking garage and so on, they own that individually. But what about the road you go on to? Do they own that? Your parents? And when you drive and you go to the grocery store, who owns that road? Or you get on a highway and you go to another city, who owns that road? Whose road is that? Because when you're driving on that road and you look to the right or you look to the left, you will see land. Let's say you look to the right, you'll see a farm. Well, that thing belongs to the farmer individually. And then you look to the right and you'll see a house. And that house belongs to the people who live in that house individually. And the car that you're in, well, that belongs to your family, right? Just your family, not everybody else either, right? But the road, what's different about the road? Who does that belong to? I mean, are you the only one that gets to go on that road? Patrick, go ahead.
It belongs to everybody?
Interesting answer. It belongs to everybody. Now, that's a very good answer because, of course, when you're driving down the road, are you the only one driving down? Who gets to go on the roads? Yeah?
Everybody who has a driving
license. Yeah, everybody who can drive a car, right? Everybody goes on the roads. Little kids can't drive, right? Because they're not old enough yet. But okay, so everybody. So one way to answer the question, who owns the roads, is everybody. Okay, but I want you to notice something strange about that answer. What does it mean to own something? Such as, think about your most personal, precious possession. Right now, in your own mind, imagine what that is. Maybe it's a toy, or maybe, I don't know, some kind of electronic device. Something. Think about that most precious thing right now. Does anybody want to share what that thing is? It might be good to have a specific example of your most prized personal possession. Think about what it is. Can somebody tell me what one of them might be? All right, Sigourney, you're willing to share? Go ahead.
My Briar Horse Manowar.
You have a horse? Oh, my God.
My Briar Horse. It's a toy horse.
Oh, okay. It's a toy horse. Okay. So let's just use, Sigourney has a toy horse. It is her favorite toy. Okay. Now, Sigourney, imagine if I told you that everybody owns that. Now, equally. Now, would that horse be yours anymore? Because if Patrick over here in our house, he owns that horse too, then basically he could come take that horse anytime he wants to, right? And then you wouldn't be able to have it. It wouldn't be your horse, right? You wouldn't own that anymore. It would be, well, his horse. It would be my horse. It would be Opal's horse. It would belong to everybody. So would it belong to you at the same time? Well, no. Because, in fact, when we talk about owning something, the idea of property includes the idea that it is exclusive. That means if it's yours, that excludes everybody else. It's yours. Nobody else is only yours. That's your toy horse. Patrick, what's your example?
Well, one of my favorite things is my iPad.
Okay, Patrick has an iPad. All right, so same idea. Think about your most precious toy, right? And then think about the idea that any child in the neighborhood could come and use it anytime. And what about you? Would that be your iPad at that time anymore?
Of course not,
right? So if somebody wants to use your iPad, they have to ask you if they can use it because it's yours. And then when they're done using it, they got to give it back to you because it's yours. Okay, all right? So that's what we mean by ownership. So the idea of a collective ownership is kind of like trying to combine two opposites, things that don't fit together. It's a very strange idea. So in fact, the only way to work out this idea that doesn't go together is that, well, who does control the roads? Who really does? When you finally think about it in the end, how does it work? Who does control the roads? Rosetta?
The government.
Good answer, right? Or the state, right? Because who's the only, it's not like a single individual, but what's the only group in the society that can say, this road cannot be used by anybody? See, that's ownership, right? The ability to say to somebody, only I have this road now. None of the rest of you have this road. Nobody else can use this road. Who's the only group in the whole society that can do that to a public road? Go ahead, Rosetta, you know the answer.
The government,
right? Especially in the form of the police acting on behalf of the government or what have you, right? So this is the idea of collective ownership, that the government, in fact, is the owner, is the controller, is the one that decides how it works. Now, then it gets more interesting in times like ours because, well, people would then kind of say, well, yes, but we are the ones that vote for the government. And then it goes kind of back and forth how this whole collective ownership thing works. But of course, if you want to go on a road and a police officer says you can't go on that road, well, pretty much that's the end of the story, right? So as much as later on, 2 years from now, you might vote for somebody different, in the meantime, you don't get to go on that road. So in the end, and then you vote for somebody new, and well, then they tell you you can't go on the road. So the government is in charge of the road. The government owns the road. Okay, so this is how it worked in Sparta as well. The helots were owned collectively. They were owned by the government, not by individuals. Okay, so kind of society is that? What kind of government is that where it owns people? That's an interesting problem. And now I'm going to give you one final twist before we leave because we have been here too long. It's been fun to talk about it, but we're over time. So I'm going to tell you about the next puzzle. Here is the next and final puzzle for today concerning the Spartan government. It was a twist on monarchy. And here it is, the Spartan twist on monarchy. There wasn't one king, there were two. Okay. That's it for today. As if it weren't complicated enough already. What kind of government do the Spartans have? Very interesting, very confusing, right? But also fascinating, I hope. All right, thanks everybody. We'll pick this up and try to solve these problems tomorrow. So Gertie, one last thing?
It's a duarchy.
Oh, somebody knows their political terms. Okay, well, but is that the final answer, Sigourney? Or is that maybe only a part of the painting? All right. Thanks, Sigourney. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.